everybody. I'm Karen Hutt-Glass. You're listening to It's All About Food. Here we are. It's August 13, 2013. And what I love about today here in New York City is it's a rainy day. It's not raining right at the moment, but what's really nice about these summer rainy days, I find, is that they're quiet. I live in an urban area right next to a playground, and although it's nice to see the kids having fun, screaming, laughing, whatever, make a lot of noise, when it rains, everything all of a sudden gets so peaceful, and I really appreciate the contrast. So today is one of those nice days. And it's always good to find something good about rain, right? Some people call it liquid sunshine. I just think it's a good time to be peaceful. Okay, let's bring on the first guest today, Ruby Roth. This is her third time on It's All About Food, and she has a new book out, V is for Vegan, The ABCs of Being Kind. She's an acclaimed activist, artist, former teacher, and author whose children's books have been featured in The San Francisco Chronicle, The Huffington Post, The Washington Times, Change.org, Glamour, and Wired, as well as on The Today Show, Fox, ABC, CNN, and other major media outlets. She first discovered children's interest in veganism while teaching at an elementary school teaching art. Complementing her degrees in art and American studies, she has researched animal agriculture, health, nutrition, and the benefits of a plant-based diet for nearly a decade. Her first book, That's Why We Don't Eat Animals, was published in 2009. A vegan since 2003, she lives in Los Angeles. Hi, Ruby. How are you today?
I'm good. I'm so happy to be back with you.
Yeah, I'm glad you're here, too. I know we've having some cyberspace challenges here, and I hope that we don't have any during this hour, because that wouldn't be fun. But let's just press on. So one of the reasons why I like having you on the show, and this is not one of the important reasons, but I always read the books of authors I talk to, and yours are very easy to read.
Yeah, I always say so easy even adults can understand them.
But that gives you time to enjoy the pictures and kind of ponder the concepts. All right, so you write children's books, and they're not your average everyday children's book. There's a special message in here, and I think it's a really important message, and yet I'm sure you get a lot of controversy behind these books.
Sure. Well, they are the first vegan and vegetarian books for children that address factory farming and the environment and the emotional lives of animals, how our food affects the whole world. And, yes, they have definitely ruffled some feathers, industry feathers, but they definitely are finding the people that they were meant for, and this population of vegans and vegetarians is just growing exponentially in the past few years.
Are there any other children's books that talk about factory farming?
Not that I know of. I've never been able to find one, and that's how my books came about, because I was searching for one to share with my students who were really curious about my eating habits, and I couldn't find one. Everything that I found was about a talking animal or a talking vegetable, and I just knew these kids weren't going to relate to that, and that's not how I spoke to them, you know, in the sugar-coated voice. So that's how these books came about.
Right. Well, I want to talk a lot more about that. I just pulled up Goodreads a little while ago and Googled or searched on vegetarian and vegan books for kids, and this list of 77 came up, and yours was number 2, and the first one was, The Lorax by Dr. Seuss. Hello? Okay, let's see what happened here. I think we need to get Ruby back. And the question is, shall I continue? Okay, well, I'm looking at this list here on Goodreads, and The Lorax is the first book. Oh, you here, Ruby?
Yes, I'm here.
Oh, good. I lost you.
back.
Yeah, you know, it's the rain. I'm sure it's the rain. I love the rain, as I was saying before, but, you know, sometimes, even though in this high-tech world, all those ions and things out there can wreak havoc at a nano level.
Well, we can't be mad at the rain.
No, we can't. I love the rain. Anyway, so I was saying, and I'll say it again, I'm looking at this list of vegetarian, vegan-friendly books for kids, and the number one book here is Lorax by Dr. Seuss. Great book. But the next one is yours. That's why we don't eat animals. Right
okay.
here, number two.
Okay, because I feel like by sugarcoating and avoiding speaking to kids directly about what's at stake with animals and the environment, I think we are just putting off what we should be learning as young people.
Okay, here's the crazy thing.
Yeah.
There's so much violence out there.
Yeah.
And there's so much violence in children's media today.
Yeah.
Everywhere. So why is it okay to have all kinds of shoot 'em up kind of videos, all
mm-hmm.
kinds of superheroes out there saving the world against evil, so many different dark concepts, and yet we cannot expose the darkness in what's really going on?
Well, I think because those video games don't push us to make any changes with ourselves, and I think change can be very scary for people, and especially when we've been born and raised and bred to think that the standard American diet is endorsed by doctors and all the healthcare practitioners in the world, and that that's totally normal. It's a real shock to a lot of people to realize that they've been a tool in someone else's game.
Mm.
And that we haven't actually made a conscientious choice about our foods most of the time. So the other part of that is that veganism is still pretty new to the mainstream, and I think a lot of people think that veganism is the standard American diet minus meat and dairy, which leaves nothing upon nothing. The fact is that people throughout history and cultures throughout history have practiced plant-based diets and thrived. And we have our own pyramid, per se, and everything we need in it.
One thing that I really believe in is telling the truth, being honest, and also empowering our youth with the truth, but also showing them as adults that we're doing what we can and we expect them to do the same, that we're working to make this world a better place. It will be their responsibility to make this world a better place, and they need to know what the issues are so
yes.
that they can work towards those things.
Yes, I think that a big issue in school and at home with parents is that we often tell kids, you can change the world, you can be anything you want to be, and we don't give them any solid foundation of what either of those things actually means. So I believe we really have to discuss the motives and what's at stake, and I think that kids are totally open and capable of understanding. My experience in the classroom proves it. They are not only eager to learn why someone wouldn't eat animals because they love animals, but they're eager to take part in something that creates solutions.
Absolutely. This isn't exactly the same subject, but I was raised with honesty. My parents always let us know what was going on, the good things, the bad things. If there were money issues during difficult periods, you know, we were aware of those things. There was nothing that was discussed in hushed tones that the children shouldn't hear. And I think that's really important because kids perceive everything. And when you're keeping secrets, that just develops distrust and fear. So I really commend you for being honest in your books.
Yeah, and I think that kind of education lasts a lifetime, no matter where you apply it. You know, this building of critical thinking and questioning, that lasts through a child's life in their professions and in their family life. There's a much bigger, broader spectrum of benefits than just the practical aspects of health and animals to this lifestyle.
I don't have children. I don't know what the books are that they're reading today. All I remember is good old Dick and Jane and Spot. But I have a feeling that some things have not changed, and I have a feeling that some of those idyllic images of animals and farms are probably still the same.
Sure, and not only do they have they lasted throughout the years, but the meat and dairy industries know that they must reach children in order to maintain their status quo in the marketplace. And one of the responses to my books coming out, I've heard in trade magazines that, you know, they want to come out with their own books targeted at school children to make sure that kids are normal, that meat and dairy are normalized with children. So it's active and it's intentional and it's organized.
Well, one of the problems is money, and schools, many schools don't have enough, and so they accept free materials, and they get a lot of free materials from these big ag food companies that want to promote their products, and they do it in a very covert way, almost. And so I'm imagining if they do create these children's books, it's only going to make things worse.
Yeah, and those will get right into the schools for that reason.
I was at the Book Expo in New York a few months ago, and one of the great things about being at a Book Expo is that there are so many free books that you can get, and it was my first time, and a friend of mine said, you absolutely must bring a suitcase, a wheelie.
Yes.
And I thought, okay, this is a great opportunity for me to collect children's books because I have a young niece and nephew, and I thought I'll get a whole pile of books for them because they love to read. And I grabbed a lot of books, and before presenting them to them, I ended up not presenting them with any of them because all of them had something in it that I found offensive. Either it was violent, promoted some sort of violence, promoted some sort of darkness, or had the kids eating the foods that I don't think kids should be eating. It was really hard.
Well, I think it's interesting to use those materials anyway and then have a discussion around them, kind of like what your parents did with you, how you were saying they included you. And I think that way they are not only, you are exposing them to this other side, but they're going to be exposed to all of these issues as they grow up. And this way they're getting an opportunity to think critically and maybe to read between the lines of messages that are directed at them. And I think that makes a difference, you know, when you go to the grocery store even and you're shopping with your kid, to point out why those, all the junk food and the candy and the cereals are on the low shelves where they're at kids' eyeballs. You know, that those are placed there by companies to trick you into wanting it, you know, and then kids start to wrap their brains around this kind of game that is played in the marketplace that they play a role in.
So in other words, teach your children critical thinking at an early age.
Yeah, I think we shouldn't avoid difficult issues or topics, but rather invite them and use them to teach our children.
I like that. I mean, I'm still trying to teach some of the adults that I'm around some of these issues, like, look at what you're being marketed to buy. Think about it.
Yeah. Well, my newest book, Views for Vegan, is only 26 sentences long, so it will be the shortest read yet to distribute.
I wanted to talk about a few of those sentences. I is for insects, not happy in jars. That brought back so many images to me. I remember as a kid, unfortunately, I wasn't too supervised, and I think it's good that children have a certain amount of freedom, but I used to play a lot in the backyard and my friends' backyards, and we did horrible things to insects. I mean, I would take the alcohol out, I would dissect them, and I'm really sorry I did all of those things. But kids are encouraged to collect insects in jars.
It's true, and I think that even before they're encouraged, they are really interested in this animal. And it's so common. You know, one of my last book signings, this little boy came and he had a moth in this box. So excited to show me. And actually Rory Friedman of Skinny Bitch was there too, and we both saw it, and Rory kind of explained to him that the moth might be happier if we let it go, and it looked like it needed to be let go. And I think he got it.
Right. I was recently at a young child's birthday party, and one of the gifts he was given was a jar to look at insects, and it was actually a toy that was packaged mm-hmm. that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think we take, just like I was saying before, we take that interest and we make them think critically about it, that this is an animal that wants to breathe and live and be in nature where it's supposed to be. And I think in education like that from childhood, just that normalizing of empathy and thinking from someone else's point of view
mm-hmm.
will make a big difference later on.
I don't make a big issue about honey, but in your book you have H is for honey, that's food for bees. Bees need their honey when temperatures freeze. And that was actually something that I didn't really think about. I don't eat honey, but when people ask me, you know, do you eat honey? And I always say, you know, let's talk about the big picture here. We've got 60
yeah.
billion land animals every year being killed for food, and I don't want to focus on that. But they need their, what happens there with honey in the wintertime?
Well, because the bees are pollinating during the summers and the springs, and when it's not icy cold out, they take the food that they make, the honey, and they store it. So it's not only used for food, but to insulate the hive so that they don't freeze to death. And I made this issue more about the bees than, you know, there's a lot of people who feel that honey is really good for you, and maybe there's some vegans who are vegans, they call themselves,
right.
who eat honey but no other animal product. And in any case, I think the bee, the colony death crisis that we're having all over the world is a real issue that everybody needs to be aware of. And then bees need our special protection at this point in time.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, clearly we're doing a lot of bad things, and it's like the canary in the mine,
mm-hmm.
The bee. We're going to see this, I think, more and more with different species, but the more we put toxic chemicals out into our world, into what we're growing, and the little animals that are feeding on those things are going to be negatively impacted faster than we are.
Yes, and the bee death is definitely a measure of what we've done, the mistakes we've made, and I think it's time to turn it around.
And I was going to say it's funny, but it's not funny. They are impacted in more ways than one with our mistakes, so not just the toxic herbicides and pesticides, but we feed them very often in these big bee compounds. We take away the honey and we put in high fructose corn syrup.
Right.
Another bad thing, and I think the total effect is what's getting them.
Yeah, I always tell people anytime you're exchanging money for animal products, mm-hmm. their best interests are not at stake at all. So when you really look into bee farming and how the queens have to be artificially inseminated even, and it's just such a strange process.
Who thinks of these things?
It's crazy. It's
mm-hmm.
just crazy. So why don't we just let the bees do what they're going to do?
Right. So there's, I'm just thumbing through this lovely little book that was enjoyable and easy to read. so important. There's K is for kitchen. Let's help cook and clean. It doesn't take much to really get to the point. Two very critical things, cooking and cleaning, both
yeah.
so important.
Yeah, I think we just have to invite our kids into the kitchen, make cooking and food and the collecting of food really enjoyable and social, and just make it a happy part of your family. Don't make it worrisome and, you know, a bunch of rules. But this is a joy in my life and in our family's life, and I think that's how you get kids interested in it. That's how kids are interested in other countries, like France, for example. Why kids, they eat pretty much everything the adults do by the time they're in kindergarten, and food and meal time is just treated as a joyful and sociable event during the day.
You know, that's funny. Every place has its advantages and disadvantages. I lived in the south of France for 4 years in the 90s, and it was an incredible time. And I did see how children are raised with an appreciation for all foods.
Yeah.
And that whining, that I don't like this, I don't like that, is just not tolerated.
It's not. And it seems like they don't make a big deal if the kid doesn't want to taste it. They just whisk it away and say, you'll try it again another time. But there are no other options given as well. There aren't alternatives or, you know, special kid food made.
On the other hand, they didn't put out a crazy law last year where meat or animal products have to be served or, like, mandatory protein in the school lunch program.
That is true. That's unbelievable, I think. Unbelievable.
Yeah, so they've got some work to do, as we all do.
Yeah.
We can all learn from everybody else. So you probably heard that here in Queens, New York, in Flushing, New York, we have the first elementary school, the first school, public school, that serves all vegetarian lunches.
I did hear that. It's fantastic.
It is fantastic. They might enjoy your books.
I was thinking the same thing.
Or they might enjoy having you come and chat with them, because that seems like, I think every school is perfect for every elementary school, but at least that would be a very receptive audience.
Yeah, you know, it's hard to get into schools in general because the rule in general is that they can't officially endorse, quote-unquote, any one diet, even though, of course, they do.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I think, and it's a really great lesson to see, you know, how much the parents had a hand in that and how the community came together on this issue. And I think it's really smart. I think we're going to see more and more of it.
Now, I just realized this, but last week I had a guy on the show, Rob Poe, who goes by the name of Broccoli Rob, and he has a musical program to encourage kids to eat vegetables. And he's a vegan, but he doesn't push the vegan thing. He just pushes the vegetable thing. And I think it's like you said, because the schools cannot endorse one particular diet.
Yeah.
Right. But who knows? Maybe Broccoli Rob needs to meet Ruby Roth and do some sort of musical, artistic vegan promotion thing.
Yeah.
I'm all about networking and connecting the dots here, but we definitely need to do more for kids.
Yeah, and it's such a great international community, the vegan and vegetarian population.
It is. We are family.
Mm-hmm.
Or family or something like that. Yeah. We just have a few minutes left. You know, I'm constantly surprised, dismayed with stuff that comes out in science. And this isn't necessarily kid-related, but I just wanted to talk about it. I was just reading some studies have been done with farmed fish where they're discovering there's all kinds of problems with farmed fish,
mm-hmm.
with the fish getting sick and having all kinds of illnesses and filth around them. And plus, it's not environmentally sustainable because we take all of this sea life, these sea animals, from the oceans to feed the fish that are being farmed. So it's not like we're not touching the oceans, because
right.
we are. We're totally depleting them. So this study came out and said that these farmed animals do better on a plant-based diet, and rather than feeding them fish, it would be really good to feed them plant-based diet. And I'm thinking, come on, can't you, wait a minute, you're missing the whole point. Can we just eliminate the whole fish scene? Don't you realize humans do better on a plant-based diet?
Yeah, I mean, skip the middle man.
Exactly, or somebody, who was it who said skip the middle meat?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we just need to eat more of what the fish in the ocean are eating.
Right. Now, is there a fish in here in your book?
I cover it in Use and Reuse, Please Don't Waste, is the oceans are in there. But yes, in the other two books, I definitely cover the oceans and fish and their emotions and sensitivities.
Yeah, well, a lot of people overlook fish because they're so different. I mean, we can sort of relate to mammals, and yet we treat them horribly, but fish are even beyond what most of us can imagine as thinking and feeling, but we know that they do.
And I think it's really important that people check out the footage of mass commercial fishing boats and what that looks like, because that is really impactful to see the just mass quantity that we're pulling out of the ocean. And I think that visual hits you on a gut level. And you can feel as your human instincts that is not right.
Oh, just how these trawlers go and scoop literally everything up for miles, and they don't even use everything that they're scooping up.
Oh, it is so wasteful.
It is obscene.
To see that, you can visually see that the fish are suffering. I mean, speaking of purposeless scientific studies, I mean, we don't need rocket science to see this. We just need to see it, to feel and to see that it's wrong. We've made such a mass mistake on this way of living and this way of eating.
I'm on your website, WeDon'tEatAnimals.com, and you have a blog, and I just wanted to talk about a few things that I read there. I loved your most recent post about where the wild things are,
yeah,
Maurice Sendak, and how you were referenced in an article about him.
And yes, pitted against him.
I know, but so funny how people don't even know what they're talking about. Hello?
They really don't. Maurice Sendak was a very dark and complicated individual, and he believed wholeheartedly in telling kids the truth. And the journalist that pitted me against him, saying, you know, they was very sentimental about those kind of picture books from the past that weren't so, quote-unquote, politically correct and left politics out. But if you look at Maurice Sendak's work and his beliefs, we're actually more similar than we are different.
Oh, I think so. Absolutely. And I'm glad you mentioned it. I remember watching the movie Where the Wild Things Are, and I had very different feelings about it because there were some very troubling, dark images in them. But
yes, some of them, that book was actually banned by some librarians when it first came out for being too disturbing and dark, which is, you know, quite familiar to me. Familiar.
Okay, another post. You posted this this video with little Antonio, which kind of went viral a few months ago.
Yeah.
I don't know. I saw the video. I don't know anything about it, but it was incredible.
Yeah. I mean, you get to witness the moment that a child realizes that he's eating animals. And somehow this was caught on tape with a mother and a son's interaction with one another, and he had quite an impact on his mom. You can see the wheels turning, and you can see the revelation. It's pretty amazing.
I'm just amazed that they caught it on camera, and even if they planned it, this child is so young and so full of wisdom and just quiet, calm peace.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think that's what makes kids so capable, much more capable than society gives them credit for, is their understanding of the world around them. And I just think it's time, you know, leaders and industry leaders across the board are saying that we're lacking critical thinkers and people with passion and drive in all sectors of industry. And I think that one of the greatest benefits of veganism, as we talked about this whole half hour, is the benefits beyond just the animals and the health. So I think veg education gives you those things. It takes some grit, it takes passion and caring and empathy. And
a lot of courage.
A lot of courage to stand up for what you believe in, even when you're the only one.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's just a solution on many levels for us as a society.
Well, that says it all. Thank you, Ruby Roth, for joining me on It's All About Food. I'm a big fan of your books. Keep writing.
Thank you again for having me.
Okay.
Thanks.
You're welcome.
Bye.
And her website is wedonteatanimals.com. Shall we take a break? And when we come back, we're going to talk with Brian Patton, the sexy vegan. We'll be right back.